Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio. And my very special guests today for the Man Talk 4 is David Whitehead, the man whose dojo there is no mercy in, and also Randy Morgans, the man from whom the church plays their organs. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good evening. Welcome.
Now, just something that occurred to me just before coming on air, guys, just randomly. Does anybody else appreciate the irony that the US has the world's largest intelligence agencies,
yet the population have basically just become really large and unintelligent?
Well, I think that is a good observation to make, because that word intelligence is implying that, of course, they're just talking about data gathering and having information at their disposal. But when you look at the population, of course, we're referring to the lack of ability to realize that they are being surveilled by their government against their constitutional rights and freedom. So, yeah, that kind of sums it up.
Yeah. Somebody said that it was sort of a yin and yang thing, you know. You can't have the one spectrum without the other.
Yeah, well, that principle, I think it applies more to the processes of nature. A lot of people try to apply it to, like, you know, good and evil, and we have to have a balance of both good and evil in order to maintain balance. And I really don't think that that's what that's referring to. I think that what we're talking about is an overall balance between polarities of energy, where we have, you know, the yin yang representing electricity and magnetism, masculine, feminine, etc. But then when you throw in that whole idea of good and evil, it now starts to bring in the notion that evil is something that's natural and therefore should not be resisted. And therefore, we need a proper balance of evil, because as the South Park movie said, without evil, there can be no good. So it must be good to be evil sometimes, right? So it kind of poses quite the paradigm when you bring that into that concept. I just think there's a bit of an error in looking at it like that, personally.
Maybe people don't know exactly what good is. I've defined it like this just this morning as well. Good is about having restraint. Evil is about having no restraint. And that's really all it's about. If you're a good person, you see something, you want to do it, you want to take it, you want to kill that person, you want to do something real nasty, you want to invade a country or something like that. If you're a good person, you restrain yourself. If you're a bad person, on the other hand, if you're actually evil, no restraint. Yep, kill that person. Kill his family too.
So it's about impulse control.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they even say in the definition of a psychopath that they have an inability to delay gratification. So it's kind of interesting how the society that's been created and all the different elements contained within that display nothing but an encouragement, especially when we're talking about, you know, we're doing the Man Talk project here and talking about how the minds of the population have been infected. There's no ability for people anymore to really delay gratification. You look at the addiction that people have to their smartphones, you know, all this online media. And of course, you can use those tools for good. I mean, look at what we're doing right now. We're broadcasting live on the internet. We can post this and listen to it on our smartphones, and we can share information. But what happens is that people are looking for instant gratification now. They want fast food. They want fast results. I see it even in my martial arts studio, where people want to come in there and they expect me to train them to be Bruce Lee within the first month. And of course, I have to explain to them that that is absolutely impossible. It takes a lot of dedication, discipline, time, commitment in order to be able to be successful at anything. So it seems like we're moving more and more away from the values because of the fact that we're being pushed into that very mindset of psychopathy that is represented in our society.
So, and psychopaths don't actually have values.
Well, I know both of you are spiritual men, and the spiritual aspect as opposed to the impulse of the material physical world is actually a great contrast. Most of our culture now are not truly spiritual. Many people are religious, but they don't understand the dynamic that goes into, we call it meditation. They don't understand the process of slowing down the mind and the body and getting very, very quiet. This is something that I've talked about a lot on all my radio shows over the years, was the fact that if you want to get close to yourself, if you want to get close to your creator, you have to go very deep inside yourself. And most people in this culture now do not have the ability to sit still for 5 seconds, much less a period of 30 minutes where they just go very deeply into a state.
Most people can't even sit through a movie these days.
It's true. The whole theater is lit up with everybody's faces because they're all on Facebook or Twitter or something, I guess, talking about the movie. And I don't know. It's just, it's interesting. The lack of focus that's there, that's actually needed. I mean, I just looked at this these statistics. I'm not sure if you guys were looking at this, but this just came out about the situation with Fukushima. And this is what people need to start focusing their attention on. And not in a way of looking at it and going, oh my God, the world is being radiated as we speak, and we should all be in a space of fear. It's not about that. I think it's about just being aware of what really matters. And of course, you know, everybody, they work hard. They want to come home and just, you know, get their minds out of the day, and they don't want to really think about anything. But what if they realize that that's why the society is set up as it is? We're all in debt. We're all just trying to make ends meet every day. We're completely self-absorbed now. It's very hard for the population to try to do anything that would bring about any kind of change. And when we see something where we're actually, we kind of have a gun to our head in a way with this issue and many, many other issues that Vinny, you cover on your show, and we all talk about and try to work towards solutions on. But it's that, again, that ability to even have the attention span to take this into consideration and to go within and ask, well, what's going on in my own mind, in my own body, in my own spirit that's preventing me from moving forward in my own personal life? And then if we can start there, maybe we can bring some kind of solution to the table of how we can affect change globally. So it's needed, I think, especially when we're talking about men and what the role of men should be in our modern society. I mean, the men were the warriors. They were the ones that stood up and tried to protect the village and tried to protect their families and provide for their families. And that is something that's been taken away. We've talked about that on other shows. And so these are the things that we need to start really focusing on and maybe taking our heads out of this whole social media thing a little bit more.
I think Chief Sitting Bull said it best. When the white man came, the men would go fishing all day. The women would take care of the children, and the men would come home, would feast and make love all night, and repeat the process over again in the morning. Only the white man is stupid enough to think he can improve on that.
Oh, exactly. I think, who was it? Well, what's his name again? Louis C.K. He did a pretty good comedy skit on that as well. And I won't repeat it because it's loaded with F-bombs, but it's pretty funny. Check it out.
Well, you could just... you could recite it, but replace the F-bomb with the word frack.
The frack or the fook. We're fooked now. The Fukushima. That's the new F-word now, I guess.
Yeah. We're either fracked or we're fookered.
Fracked or fookered, yeah.
And if you happen to be in the Middle East, then you're definitely Shiite Muslim.
Yeah, up Shiite Creek.
Yeah. Well, I do like them. I do like their spirit, though, in the Middle East, because despite the fact that they get treated like Shiite, they still maintain a Sunni disposition.
It's true.
When we talk about the world and this kind of thing, I don't know about you guys, but I haven't traveled all that much, haven't really seen the world. And this is what I also find very interesting, is that people who have seen the world often try and take it over, you know, president or whatever. All the rest of us just kind of want to keep to ourselves and, you know, keeping our own little borders, take care of people in the street and what have you. And I think that's really the small little social network and fabric that we need, but have basically crucially lost. And as a direct result of losing that direct connection to everybody about you, you get this kind of this apathy or this loneliness type sensation, like nobody's actually there to really, really care about you. You don't get enough hugs or enough sunlight or whatever because you're stuck inside on your iPhone or whatever. You know, it's almost like our social interaction is devoid of the substance which actually necessitated social interaction in the first place, in the primordial sense.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I personally, I'm the kind of person that I've always been dying to travel. I've only been to a few places, been to Europe a little bit, and I've been all over Canada and just, you know, a few places in the States. But I would love to be able to go to Machu Picchu in Peru, go to Egypt, go to, you know, anywhere, actually. You know, we live on a beautiful planet, and it would be incredible to be able to go around and see it. Even going to Alaska, I had some friends that went on a cruise in Alaska, and they took some photographs, and it was just stunning. You know, it'd be an incredible thing to be able to have that spectrum of awareness where you didn't look at it only as, you know, you and your house, but you started to be able to have a global perspective of looking at, you know, just how, what we have, the wealth that we all have. We all have, we live on a wealthy planet. The planet is rich. It's got everything that we need. It's given us everything that we need. And yet here we are trying to hold up this synthetic system that's been superimposed on top of that natural system, and we are working to try to sustain it. And in that effort, we're effectively destroying ourselves. And so for me, being able to travel would be something that would be a way of expanding awareness. And it's sad to see that we can't even think on a planetary level, let alone a cosmic level, let alone realizing that we are, you know, we're on a blue marble flying through space, and we're surrounded by trillions of galaxies, and, you know, the possibilities are endless. And, you know, so for me, it's always trying to have that bigger perspective and then bringing it down into the, you know, the sort of the macro level, but, or the micro level, but, you know, each to their own, I guess.
It does kind of feel like we're on a kind of shut-in mode. I mean, there are people that have the luxury to travel, but it is a luxury. And even the ability to gather together. I had a chance to travel out to Boulder, Colorado to a conference the second week of October. And some of these people were people that I know from the internet, people that I work with, the people with the Global Breakthrough Energy Movement. But the 4 days that I spent out there was really a study in real-time human interaction. It was like a tribe of people that came together. And I was amazed at how different the experience was. People who got together and talked, people who got together and had meals, people who got together and hugged each other and looked at each other in the eye and exchanged ideas. The dynamic was completely different. And it's a poverty that travel is considered to be a luxury in this world, that there is this concept that we're not really entitled to freely travel anymore the way we should be able to at this point in our technological development. The cost of air freight, of air flights, should be astronomically cheap, and yet it's incredibly expensive because of the way that everything has been manhandled and mismanaged by the government overseers who make travel just a living hell anymore. I mean, flying is not fun. It is not fun to go places into weird jurisdictions and be rectally probed by authorities and to be constantly observed. Travel should be something that we all do as a part of our lives.
They've right. turned travel into alien abduction. I mean, think about it. You get looked at the whole time. You get anally probed. They got all of this advanced technology to scope you out and suss your stuff. You're totally under their control, and it's not fun.
Oh, and now they want to arm these guys. These guys are, because of this whole fiasco with this shooter,
LAX airport.
And now the TSA, of course, is just like, well, I guess we all need to be armed, and we could be the, you know, Gestapo 2.0 and make sure that nobody comes in there with any underwear bombs or anything like that. And, you know, it's just getting absolutely ridiculous. And it goes back to how many people in even American history that have warned that you can't have freedom and security. You can't be going only for security and asking your government to provide you security and expect them to keep your freedoms and your rights intact. It's impossible. And, you know, if we were all empowered and worked as individuals and worked tightly in our communities, like what Randy was talking about, there wouldn't be any need to have some government group of thugs in there patrolling every part of orifice in your body, making sure that you're not some kind of quote-unquote...
Well, that assumes that there actually is a need for that now, and they never was.
Well, exactly.
No, Go back to the original premise of 9/11 and the story that was originally told about that very dark day. The story that was portrayed to us was that that air flight which hit the towers, the first plane coming out of Boston, was hijacked by men with box cutters. Now, I fly a fair amount. I mean, I don't fly all the time, but I travel enough that I'm in touch with what goes on an airplane and who is on airplanes. I can't imagine a flight where three or four or five or however many of these so-called alleged Islamic terrorists could take over an airplane where a bunch of men are sitting in the plane and they would not attempt to overtake them. A box cutter is not a great weapon. It wouldn't be my first choice. And quite frankly, I never believed that story. But every step along the way, they hoik it up a little bit more so that there's more fear and people never stop to examine the original scenario, which was how in the hell did guys with box cutters take over a plane full of people, some of which must have been men who would have theoretically been physically capable of overcoming it.
Well, maybe they were serving all the drinks in the aisle out of BPA containing feminizing plastic bottles. Ergo, there was no real bit on the plate. We'll be right back after the break. For the Man Talk Project, for Randy Morgan and David White, here back in the folks.
Bonkers. Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It might be a little bit bonkers, but I assure you there's nothing crazy about me. There's nothing crazy about wanting to know really, really interesting, scary, and diabolical information. Wait a second. I might have that confused with something else. Maybe this is a really bad idea that I've stumbled onto here doing this show and talking to all the people that I do. Maybe I'm corrupting my mind with all sorts of different information so that I've got something accidentally called perspective. It's a bad thing. You know, don't you hate that? People who just refuse to get perspective on things. They don't want to listen to you because they think that they know everything about you when obviously they know nothing. You ask them a single question about what's going on and they can't answer. And they give you some kind of smart aleck remark like, oh, I'm sure you've got some kind of big conspiratorial explanation for us. Are you telling me that you don't have any explanation of any kind? Well, oh, okay. So you trust this big... You trust this big organization, do you, bro? You trust the president? Who funds him? You don't know? Well, I'm sure you've got some kind of an answer. So let me get this straight. You trust somebody who you've never met, you don't know, and you have no idea who's financing him, and you have no idea what his policies are. Right, is that the person that you trust? You've got that much information on somebody who you place the trust of your life in and your very like opinion in your country. And you're the one who's calling me nuts? I'm the one who's crazy? I think you got your head up your ass, mate. All right? Tell you the truth? Just shush. Okay?
You're just a conspiracy theorist. You don't know anything about it. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. That's the response. I mean,
these kind of people should just lie down before they hurt themselves.
Yeah. You know, it's just the fact that there are people who do research and try to find out answers to mysteries and unsolved situations.
How
and then there are people who believe what they're told.
Friggin' dare people look for answers themselves. Why don't they just trust authority? I mean, authority's never been abused before, has it?
Never. It'll never happen here, Vin. It'll never happen here. It's only historical, and it's only everywhere else. It's never going to happen in Canada. It's never going to happen in the United States. It's never going to happen in New Zealand. It's only everywhere else that I am presently.
I love it how people who don't study history tell you things are all historical. They're not going to happen again.
Yeah. Well, did you really watch the History Channel, though?
Yeah, that'll work out real well. Really studying history is a major task because, well, it's been written by people who have rewritten it from its original versions. That's why a lot of the work that I think all of us do in having people on who are doing the deep historical research is so important, because this is painful shit, realizing that your history's been rewritten and things did not happen the way the consensus collective reality stream tells you it's happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, we can't say the S word on the FCC regulated.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You have to say Shiite Muslim.
Shiite. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I do think that panic is setting in. All right. I don't know about you guys, but I've been kind of getting this kind of feel, like a vibe, like people are panicking, like people are getting really, really like angry. Or they can't control it. I've been feeling this a little bit.
I'm glad you brought
it up. I just feel like
I'm...
It's like I'm itching for a fight.
Yeah. No, I've noticed it too, even in my own circles of friends and stuff. But obviously, it seems everybody's getting a little antsy. There's a lot of infighting going on and a lot of backstabbing and name-calling, and it's just getting really weird. And I don't know if it's some people are like, oh, it's Mercury retrograde or whatever. And I don't know. I think that ultimately we're dealing with the consciousness of humanity in a way. The fact that we're all on the trail of criminals and we're all trying to figure out what the hell went wrong, and everybody's head's kind of spinning, even people that are seasoned in this work. And it's sort of reaching a boiling point, and there's only so long that you can stay sane watching this continue, you know, watching this continue without really any real opposition or real change taking place. So I think people, they get frustrated, they get very closed-minded in the sense that they all only focus on their own work and their own lives, and they don't really take as much time anymore to go out and expand and listen to other people's perspectives and to take that time to have quiet time to themselves. I know for myself it's a challenge, and I really struggle to keep my life in balance where I have, you know, I run a business, I do my show, I do a lot of research, I have a family, I have all kinds of commitments, and trying to also squeeze in some quiet time, like what Randy was talking about, you know, 20-30 minutes a day of just clearing your mind, focusing, breathing, trying to get rid of that stress. And I think a lot of people out there, they don't have those outlets. They're overworking themselves, and maybe that's kind of contributing to that.
I think the other aspect of this is that the economic control grid that we live in, and it's global, it doesn't matter whether you denominate in dollars, pounds, lira, yen, the economic control grid is a psychological process. And as the screws are being tamped down here and people are realizing that things are getting tighter, budgets are getting tighter, prices are going up, it begins to drive the primal aspects of survival, which are usually off of the zero-sum game, which means I must conquer you so that I can win, because there is only so much of this. So we wind up again back in the cave, beating each other over the head with bones for the perceived nugget at the end of the cave. And that really is kind of a baseline thing with the economic system, because people do not know how to think right now outside of the economic box.
They're not used to dealing with crisis.
Well, yeah, and if they can keep this, and I've kind of been thinking about this as well. Everybody's been saying, oh, economic collapse. Well, first of all, it's already collapsed. It's already fiat. Yes. It's completely being made up. But I don't know. What about you guys? I don't think they're necessarily just going to crash it one day and it's just going to be absolute out of control mayhem. They're fully well aware that a lot of people, it's going to be very difficult to manage that situation.
These people have a tactic. Slowly. Yeah. But surely, okay? They don't do shock and awe grand scale. They do it on a contained scale and limit the media coverage. They don't collapse whole global economies unless there's something really, really awesome in it that they're going to spark off with. So if you want the global economy to get back on track, what they do is then they instigate a little incident which propagates a world war. And I think that's what they did on 9/11, actually. We've been living in the in a kind of soft kill, kind of slash cold war sort of thing, where the US can just seize geopolitical control of remaining resources in order to secure it for the 21st century, the American 21st century. But the globalists, on the other hand, who control America and pretty much every other freaking country, just want to use the Americans as sort of like a, I don't know, like a weapon on the battlefield kind of thing. Like they're playing some giant game of Risk, except they're risking people's lives rather than little pieces of plastic. And it occurs to me that they're going to squeeze the economic situation tightly, to the point where people will no longer be able to afford their homes. They're going to increase the taxes at the same time as increase the prices of everything, so that people will very, very gradually have no income of any kind and eventually make their way totally into debt. And it's once everybody's pretty much in a massive state of debt, then you can pretty much just turn them into slaves. It's not that difficult. You give them lodgings in a slave block in a major city next to railroad tracks. You tell them that they have to go to work in order to get rations every day. And people will do it because they've got no other choice. They have to survive. And they don't know how to grow food. They've never lived in a farm. They've never so much as planted a freaking carrot seed. They'll be completely dependent, just the way the New World Order wants them.
Emma, there's the other dynamic of understanding how there's different kinds of fear-based reactions. I mean, there's that one type of instinctual fear that takes place when you have danger headed your way and you have a fight-or-flight reflex response and you decide you're going to either get out of the way, you're going to try to escape, or you're going to fight that situation and try to survive. That's a very natural response, and you could say that's one element of fear. But that there's also the anxiety that is what I think they prey on. So if they can create a situation where everybody's in a situation of constantly being anxious about what's coming next, they play on that because that's the most powerful. Being more than an opponent in your mind, in your opponent's eyes, you know, being more than that, being bigger than you actually are, creating the illusion that there's another big collapse or a big calamity or a big disaster around the corner. Even though, of course, we know that there actually are some of those things, but they got to keep the mental state of everybody as, you know, fear, trepidation, constant anxiety, because that is the key, and that's actually the formal format of trauma-based mind control, is that they have to do it. It's not a sudden thing. It's something that is slowly done, and then that's how they manipulate the mind.
Fear turns off your cognitive function, and when you stop thinking, you start doing what you're told.
That's exactly right. Yep. No, it's exactly right. And they've done a lot of studies on this. Yeah.
That's the crux of the control. The individual, sentient, theoretically human, does have a level of control over this when they stop operating out of fear mode. Yeah. Most people have been conditioned from childhood up to run on fear. The adrenal glands pump. Our school systems are basically designed to install that. That meme is installed continuously as we go through culture. There's a reason why most secret societies use a trauma-based form of ritual as well. If we begin to what I was talking about earlier, become masters of our own sanctuary, our own mind, our own soul, our own spirit, and begin to throw off that fear, we have opportunities to make decisions point by point that move away from the control grid. I don't think we can change society as a whole with force. I don't think we can change it any other way than to begin initiating this type of thought into our own circles. In other words, this is an interchange that's going to move outward. And I guess I'm an optimist. I still sometimes think this is possible.
Well, I was just thinking about something David was saying just before about how you constantly have to live in anxiety because you're worried about what's coming around the corner and keeps you on edge and stops you from thinking, right?
Yeah.
Well, you know what stops you from worrying about what's going to happen next? Living in the moment.
Absolutely.
Boom! No, suddenly all your anxiety disappears. There is just right this second, and that's all there is, and it's constant. And what's really encouraging about that is this little moment that we're experiencing right now is infinite. It's stretched all the way out through history, and it's going to stretch out all the way through eternity. So in a way, we get to share a moment with everybody who has ever lived or whoever will. That's a very encouraging thought to me.
Absolutely it is. And you nailed it on the head, because when you think about what causes fear, and actually I grew up when I was young very much in a space of fear. I was afraid of my own shadow. I was, it was the climate that I was in when I was growing up. And it took me a long time to be able to finally rid myself of that. And so I can, you know, having that experience in my life at a younger age, I was able to learn from it and also to see it demonstrated in other people around me. And to realize that, you know, yeah, it's exactly it. You're either fearing something that's about to happen in the future, which of course hasn't happened yet, or you're dwelling on something that's taken place in the past, which of course you can't exactly go back and change. So really the only place where you're active, the only place where you do have choice, where you do have sort of control of your own life, your decisions, your destiny and everything else is in the moment. So of course that's where courage is found. And in reading a lot of the literature, studying different cultures and different warrior cultures and traditions that they would use to try to empower their people in their community so that they could defend themselves. This was very much a part of that, was to get them to meditate and to focus on becoming and living in the moment. Because if you can do that, then you will not be afraid of what the outcome is. A lot of those warriors would go into battle in their own mind. They sort of knew. They knew in their mind, okay, well, I'm going to die today, but I've faced my fear of it. And funny enough, it was those warriors that would walk out alive. And it was the ones that were always in constant fear. Oh my God, I could get stabbed by that guy. I could get hit by that spear, run over by that chariot or whatever. Those are the guys that actually, that's exactly what happened. So I think you sort of contribute to creating your own reality in that way. And so if you know that, man, that is a powerful piece of information.
Yeah, indeed. Of course, you don't create the entirety of your reality. Somebody said that to me once, and I was going, well, hold on a second. If you create your reality, what about the other 7 billion people?
Exactly.
Do you cancel them out? We'll be right back.
Yeah. Tonight we're going to make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV. You haven't had your social netball team practice, so you're not too tired. Oh yeah, sounds like it's all on. You say something to me like, I might go to bed, I've got work in the morning. But I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's business time. It's business time.
It's What do you mean? You mean it's business time.
Oh. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks to sing this song, you know.
You tell me that you want to get me into massive debt and destroy my country, but I know what you mean. You mean, oh yeah, it's going to be good for business. And my very special guests are David Whitehead and Randy Morgans. This is Man Talk 4, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you've enjoyed the first three installments. We've been kind of trading places, so I'll host one Man Talk, David will host one, Randy will host one. We just kind of go around in that circle, sort of like it's been like once a month since we started. And it just kind of happened by accident. And most of the Man Talks also do as well. Just kind of go wherever the breeze blows, like Columbus. But anyway, what does it mean to be a man today? Well, you've got to have a nice watch, a great suit, clean shaven, of course, with some Calvin Klein deodorant, and also some beautiful, like, greasy hair product, and a real flashy belt buckle, you know, like a $100 bill, y'all, or something, you know. And some really, really awesome branded shoes, some branded sunglasses, and a flashy smile, and a nice car, and a good house that you've got to yourself, and liquor, and drugs, and a good career where you've got power over other people, unquestioningly. That's what a man is, ladies and gentlemen.
And you gotta have a copy of Grand Theft Auto 5 and probably a Maxim magazine subscription and a head full of knowledge about useless information that will never really affect you positively in your life. So,
like sport. Yeah,
exactly.
Sports trivia. I understand it. I mean, it's like a certain guy had a certain number of balls in a certain way and did so and so and blah, blah, blah. Okay. Does that change my reality, the fabric of space-time or something important?
Those words were too big for the average modern man to comprehend.
What, space-time? There are space only time, one syllable, motherfucker.
Okay, so you mentioned sports, and this is something I've been thinking about, and I have sons, so I've gone through various cycles over the years of dealing with the sports thing, and I was talking to someone, and I said, you know, the best it ever was for me was when I was probably 9 to 11 and playing, like, sandlot baseball somewhere. Hello?
Oh, yes, yeah, you're still there.
9/11 again.
Oh, no. Did I say 9/11?
9/11.
That was subliminal. That was subliminal. 9/11.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, you will forget this 9/11 reference. Pay no attention to the Rockefeller.
Pay no attention to that. That was very subliminal, wasn't it? But, you know, think about that.
I thought it was a Freudian slip, man.
Why does Freud get blamed for all this?
I don't know. Maybe because his name is near rhyme with the word fraud.
But, no, think about it. All sports is now is corporatism. And I grew up in a period when they groomed boys to go off and be baseball or football stars. They'd go to university, they'd get recruited, they'd be in the NFL, and they would be hawking soda and automobiles to the rest of consumer America for the sake of the corporations.
Well, if you think about the history of sport, I mean, sport was, you know, those games were played by children. I mean, that's where it used to be, and men would be out in the business world. But now they knew that if they could pack these huge stadiums, and this was actually written down. I mean, a lot of these guys, when they were these social engineers, which for people that aren't familiar with that term, is basically people that engineer society, and they actually, there is a science behind that. They were thinking about the best way to be able to castrate the male population so that they wouldn't be rising up and resisting what they had in plan to be coming in next. So the best way was to pack these large Coliseum-like stadiums full of thousands of screaming drunk men, of course, mostly between the ages of 20 and 30 years old, but of course now it's pretty much everybody. And if they could do that and then keep the women hooked on to the soaps and the gossip and all that kind of stuff, then they could get the kids into the school systems and they could completely bring them up and raise them themselves by the state and by the system, and you could disempower humanity very easily if you could keep their eye on the ball, as opposed to keeping their eye on the real ball, which is played on the geopolitical stage. So, yeah, the history of sport and the constant obsession with the modern male with it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with sport in itself, but it's just a matter of context and focus, I think.
It's about psychological castration, you know?
Yeah.
That's all it is, in my opinion. Because I see a lot of manliness and a lot of bravado amongst people who are, big sports fans, and so it's particularly when they're in a group. And it's actually quite rare for me to find like a really intelligent person who's into lots of really sophisticated subjects and things like that to be really into sport as well. Yeah. It's actually quite rare. It does happen on occasion, but it's more like I do a lot of thinking, but I also watch a little bit of sport here or there. You know, rather than sport is my life. I've got this car there and all these models and t-shirts and regalia and what have you. You know, those people, I've never met one of them that's real sharp Crayola. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, if they can create these superheroes, these modern god type characters, these gods, these people that you can worship, which are these, you know, sports celebrities, if you can get the men to want to constantly emulate those people and go and cheer for those people and constantly talk about those people, then those same men are not going to sit there and try to empower themselves to be as great or greater than the people that they are getting on their knees and worshiping and constantly focusing their attention on. So if you're focusing constantly on other people and what they're doing, what these multi-million dollar making sports celebrities are doing, then you're not focusing on your own life. And if you bring it back to the whole thing, we were talking about fear and anxiety, where, you know, you're supposed to be living in the present moment. How can you live in the present moment as an empowered man if you're constantly living in the moment of somebody else's life and trying to live your life vicariously through them and through your projection of who you think they are? And most of these guys aren't even close to a personality type that you would want to emulate or to have a child look up to, or how they're presented in the media. And I know that just from actually meeting and speaking with some of them. I have some friends that work at the airport, and they run into these guys all the time, and they're losers. You know, they really are. And it's not all of them, of course, not a general statement, but it just seems to come part and parcel with the job.
Yeah, there's something about becoming really, really wealthy and successful that turns you inexorably, this happens to a lot of people, not all, that turns you inexorably into a douchebag.
Yeah.
You've no longer got manners. You're suddenly all very pushy and rushy. You feel like you've got this kind of sense of self-importance. Like everybody owes you because you're famous. That's just freaking cold, disgusting, man. It should actually be the direct opposite. It should be even more open and more friendly than everybody else, because you've got something to celebrate, something to share, something to bring joy into people's lives. Why would you treat them badly when the people who are your adoring fans and what have you are actually the ones responsible for getting you where you are and keeping you in such high esteem? It smacks of arrogance and ungratefulness to me.
Well, again, this is a product of corporatism. This is the corporate culture. When you are, I don't know how much either of you engage with corporate America. I do it as little as possible, but I do have to deal with it. And the corporate mindset, at least here in the United States, with my observation, is that the sports metaphor plays very huge into corporate culture as well. I mean, even the language that you would hear in a boardroom or that you would hear in a sales meeting has to do with things that smack of that particular culture. Salespeople that I know who are in high-level corporate sales jobs live off their adrenaline. They're literally, every day is the big game for them. They literally have to sometimes take one for the team. There's just this whole blood sport mindset in corporatism that mirrors the sports metaphor, the sports metaphors that's given to us by big corporate sports conglomerates.
Okay, well, sorry about that. I had my mic muted. I couldn't find the frickin' button. That was weird. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. This is the Man Talk Project with David Whitehead. The world was meant to be free.com, I believe, is your website, right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Randy, you're going to be really upset that I can't remember yours.
It's offplanetradio.com.
Offplanetradio.com. All right. We'll be right back after this short break, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you go anywhere. Hour number two of the Man Talk Project 4.